I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Back to our phone lines, and Suzanne is next. Good morning, Suzanne. What is your question? Okay, Suzanne, are you there? Okay, let's put Suzanne on hold, and we'll check back with her in just a second. Next listener is asking, Ton, they're wondering whether they've lost one of their London plane trees that they planted last year. It hasn't leafed out yet. They say it's planted in kind of clay soil. They've been trying to keep it wet as directed by the nursery, and they're wondering if it's common to have no leaves this late in the spring.
Well, they leaf out very late, so I would leave it in the ground and give it another month or so and see what happens. You know, it should be forming leaves by now, but because it's a new tree, it may be a little late.
And is there anything they can do to help it along?
If the soil's moist, don't water it. I don't know what instructions the nursery gave them, but the quickest way to kill a tree, besides just cutting it down, is overwatering, or one of them. And so if the soil's moist, there's no reason to add more water.
Okay, a next listener says, they have heard you say that you need two honeyberry bushes to cross-pollinate for fruit. Is that correct?
It should be. I would need to. The honeyberries are one that I don't personally grow, but I believe you need two different. You know, Maria, I am just going to have to play mea culpa. Let's take a mea culpa
on
this.
One, right?
And not sure. Honeyberries are an obscure crop that are becoming more popular, but it's one I would need to look up and be sure. I believe they do, but I don't want to say yes and have them. Yeah.
All right, let's go back to Suzanne. Good morning, Suzanne.
Hello?
Good morning. You're on the show. Yeah. What is your question this morning?
Yeah, I got a question about peach trees. I'm looking to purchase a couple of peach trees. Do I need to have more than one for them to pollinate?
90% of the time, no. The major one that does require cross-pollination is Hale's Best. And so as long as you're not growing that particular one, you should be fine as far as just planting one.
All right. Also the soil. My soil is clay. It's, you know, it's pretty thick. And I'm wondering, are they particular about the soil they're planted in?
Well, if it's a clay soil, they'll grow in it as long as there's some drainage and they're not overwatered.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. I'll buy one. And I was worried about it because I got a couple silver maple trees that struggle with iron chlorosis. And I'm wondering if I'm going to have the same kind of problem with a peach tree.
Possibly. It depends on the rootstock it's grafted onto and how much water is in the soil, you know, over time. And so if your silver maples, which almost always have iron chlorosis, you know, it can't barely be an indicator, but there's a 50-50 chance that you're going to need to supplement a peach tree with EDDHA iron.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
All right,
Chuck.
Thanks for your call. Maria. Sorry, there was a bit of confusion there with your name.
Sorry. I didn't know you're still there. I just checked my reference, and yes, honeyberries do require cross-pollination. I just wanted to be sure
I sent
them out to buy more plants. So.
It's one of those things you think you know something, then you think, ooh, maybe I better check.
Yeah, it's been a couple months.
I'd better look at that. Yeah. That's great. Now let's go to Suzanne, who's on the line. Good morning, Suzanne.
Hi, I have arborvitae that there's probably about 15 across the back fence, and they are on the south side in Pleasant Grove, and they're losing needles, and you can see through them, you can tell that there's something going on. I'm just wondering if there is a fertilizer or a spray that I could put on that and help them.
maybe not. There's been a lot of, when I say a lot, you know, I get calls through the summer with arborvitae browning out like yours are doing, and you check the watering and it's normal. And I think that there's an unidentified disease out there that might be taking some of them down. So there's always that possibility, but what is the water situation on them like?
We water 3 times a week. When they look really dry, I'll kind of deep water, but mostly it's 3 times a week on sprinkler.
It could be that they're getting too much, but you're not really going to know until you just get a shovel out and dig down a foot and see how moist the soil is.
Okay, it looks like it's pretty dry to me, but is there anything like, I heard you a couple of weeks ago, maybe 20 old something with the fertilizer to put on it?
Fertilizer just isn't a miracle cure if a plant turns brown. You know, that plant is turning brown because it's sick. And so fertilizer, what it does is it may stimulate some new growth, but it's not going to salvage your plants if they're struggling. So
well,
the first thing
they're not turning brown. They're just losing their needles, like,
well,
a lot.
And, yeah, it's, and if they're just losing needles, then the first thing I would check is the water. And if they're being hit 3 times a week with sprinklers and you know that that water's penetrating in and your supplement irrigating, you know, it sounds like a little too much, but I don't know. And so when after you're done irrigating, go out the next day and see how wet the soil is. And if it's still pretty dry, you may need to get some drip, like just some inexpensive drip hose to put along the planting. But when I start seeing this sort of thing in conifers, then the first thing I always check is the water. You know, there could be a possibility there's some scale or something in there and some insect problems, but it sounds more like water issues to me.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your help.
Great. Thank you for your call this morning.
I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Larry in Mapleton is wondering, Ton, he says the vegetable seed packets typically have a date stamped on the back or a text that says packed for, and they have a specific calendar year. But he wants to know, what does it really mean with respect to how long those seeds remain viable?
Well, the seeds may be older than, you know, this year, but they're germinated in testing to make sure that they meet minimum germination standards. And so what that means packed for this year is that they were either harvested last year and then packed for the 2021 season, or they were harvested and tested and they have been found suitable for the 2021 season.
All right. Let's take a break. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. Next listener is looking for some help with something that's eating their radishes, Ton. They're in raised beds, in a raised bed box. They say there's no leaf mining or root or stem feeding. They're just eating the radishes. Any idea what that might be?
There could be a few things eating them. There's an insect called garden sinflan. There could be a number of things under there. So what do you do? You know, you hate to use an insecticide and then not be able to eat the radishes for a few days. But I'm trying to remember if there's garden sinflans, and then specifically there are some army worms that could be in there. And there's a number of insects.
They would eat the whole radish?
Yeah. Well, they would eat. Well, voles would do that, or gophers would also do that. If the entire radish is gone, that's usually more something vertebrate, like a tunneling animal.
Right, but these are above ground.
Well, and if the entire thing is gone, then skunks could be doing it. There's all sorts of things. I misunderstood and thought there was just little bugs eating it, but there are a number of mammals, you know, skunks, raccoons, that might be getting into those and just eating them.
So what would they do?
They'd have to use exclusion, a fence or something around the garden, or, you know, low tunnels or something to exclude them.
All right. Jane is in West Valley. She's our next caller. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. A couple years ago, we took out the plants from our park strip, and we took out the grass, and we planted a few plants that are kind of more water-wise, but would like to put something else out there as well. Now, I have some lemon balm, and I also have some cranesbill that are growing rampant and could easily be, you know, they take over pretty well wherever I put them. So I was wondering, number one, would that be good in a semi-arid, more drought-tolerant location like the park strip? And secondly, would they take over from some of the other plants that we've already put there?
The geraniums would not be a great selection for hot sun and limited water. The lemon balm would do better just because it's in the mint family and once established are relatively drought hardy, but you still run the risk of lemon balm maybe forming more of a ground cover instead of staying as an individual plant. You know, has the lemon balm been pretty aggressive in your yard already?
Yeah, it comes up where I haven't planted it. It kind of, you know, I have to pull it out of areas that I don't. But if I stay on top of it, I can keep it under control. But then I am worried because it is rather aggressive. So that's what I was wondering is if I put it in there, would I regret it later?
It depends on how earnest you are in keeping track of it and being a good mother to the plants and keeping it in check. You know, if you let that go, it'll probably eventually take over. And so it just depends on how comfortable you are with that possibility, how much you keep after it. You know, there are some mint family plants out there that won't take over. You know, but you would have to purchase them. The cat mints, you know, Walker's Low is one that is a really good one. There's several other dwarf cat mints that I like. The hummingbird mints are some that stay, they get a little bigger, but they don't get any wider than 18 inches or 2 feet. So there are mint family plants that stay contained. It's just that whenever you're looking at something like lemon balm or spearmint or peppermint especially, those are ones that I'm more cautious about.
Okay, I guess, what would be some other choices for a park strip that is going to be semi-dry? We try to hose water it maybe about once a week, but sometimes we forget.
Well, those I mentioned, the cat mints, the hummingbird mints, blue mist spirea, Russian sage, there's lavenders, there's many of them out there that would do just fine. Even if you're watering once a week, black-eyed Susans and the purple coneflowers or other coneflowers would do fine also if they're being watered once a week. You know, if you were going every couple of weeks, then the lavender, Russian sage, hummingbird mint, red yucca, all of those would be fine.
Okay. Thank you for your advice.
All right. Thank you for your call this morning. A next listener wants to know, they have kind of a two-part question, Ton. They're looking for a weeping white spruce. They did find one at a local retailer, but the lower branches have died, and they're wondering if they could expect that tree to replace those branches. Or are they permanently gone? And if not, where can they find one?
Well, weeping white spruce are one species that I'm torn because they're gorgeous weeping. They stay 3 or 4 feet wide and get more tall, and they're the same species of spruce as Alberta spruce, and they have a tendency to scorch on the backside when they're planted against a wall or mm-hmm. a home, and they're just a little more sensitive. And so I love the tree, but I am really torn on whether I would ever put one in my yard because of, 50% of them do that. So they could try to find one that I think is a little bit better called Morton Tower
mm-hmm.
that looks very similar, that may do a little better. But, the major garden centers, I don't know what county they're in, but the bigger garden centers, whether it's Glover's, J&J up in Layton, down here in Utah County, Linden Nursery, Cook's, those would be the kinds of places, Alpine Gardens up in Box Elder County. But there's also been a shortage of landscape plants this year. There's a big problem getting shipping and just lots of different things, somewhat due to the pandemic. And so there is that problem, but most major garden centers are going to carry those.
All right. We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. When we come back, we're going to be talking about drought-hardy perennials. Stay with us, won't you?
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.